and 56. So I'm going to read 55 first, and then we'll read 56 together. Pratyakhyatyo virinchena Vishnu patapita Durvashasharanam jata Sarvam kailashabashinam. Translation: when Durvasa, who was greatly afflicted by the blazing fire of the Sudarshan Chakra, was thus refused by Lord Brahma, he tried to take shelter of Lord Shiva, who always resides on his planet known as Kailash. That's number 56. Shri Shankara Uvacha Bhajanna Tata Prabhavama Bhumi Bhajanna Tata Prabhavama Bhumi Jasmin Pare Nye Pyaja Jiva Kosha. Jasmin parenje pyajab jiva koshaha bhavantita bhavanti kale na bhavanti hridrishaha. Bhavanti kale na bhavanti hridrishaha. Sahasra soja travajam brahmanaha. Sahasra soja travajam brahmanaha. Bhajanna tata prabhabhama bhumi. Jasmin parenje pyajah jiva koshaha bhavanti kale na bhavanti hridisha. Sahasro jatra vajam brahmanaha. Bhajam natata prabhavama bhumni. Jasmin parenje pyaja ijiva kosha. Bhavanti kale na bhavanti hridrisa. Sahasya soja travajam brahmanaha. Please chant.
Thank you.
Shri Shankara Uvacha. Lord Shiva said, Vayam, we, na, not, tata, O my dear son, Prabhamamaha, sufficiently able, bumni, unto the great Supreme Personality of Godhead, jasmin, in whom, pare, in the transcendence, anye, others, api, even, aja, Lord Brahma, jiva, living entities, koshaha, the universes, bhavanti, can become, kale, in the course of time, na, not, bhavanti, can become, he, indeed, idrishaha, like this, sahasrasaha, many thousands and millions, yatra, wherein, vayam, all of us, brahmanaha, brahmamaha, are rotating. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki. Lord Shiva said, my dear son, I, Lord Brahma, and the other demigods who rotate within this universe under the misconception of our greatness, cannot exhibit any power to compete with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For innumerable universes and their inhabitants come into existence and are annihilated by the simple direction of the Lord. Purport. There are innumerable universes in the material world, and there are innumerable Lord Brahmas, Lord Shivas, and other demigods. All of them rotate within this material world under the supreme direction of the Personality of Godhead. Therefore, no one is able to compete with the strength of the Lord. Lord Shiva also refused to protect Durvasa, for Lord Shiva also was under the rays of the Sudarshan Chakra sent by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jananjana Charakaya Chaksur Ummilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurube Namaha. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Shrimate Ramapada Swami Iti Namine. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine. Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashyatyade Shatarine. Vancha kalpa taruvyasya kripa sindhuvya vacha patitanam pavanevyo vaishnavevyo namo namaha. So Durvasa Muni is becoming aware by force of who's the boss, basically, who is the supreme controller. And one thing that we can understand for this is we hear in the beginning of this narration that Durvasa Muni was meditating on the Brahman effulgent, isn't it? You were pointed out that his conception of the Absolute was not complete, was not perfect. And therefore, when he's looking for shelter, he's looking to be protected, he's come to discover that who is that supreme shelter. So he's basically by ordeal becoming a trained and educated in where is the perfect shelter, where is the supreme Paramdhamma, the supreme shelter. And which again is the difference between Durvasa Muni and Maharaj Ambarish. Maharaj Ambarish has perfect understanding of who is the supreme protector, who is the supreme shelter. So it becomes clear Durvasa Muni's position, and it's going to become more clear because he is going from one shock to another shock. Basically, and this is such an important lesson for aspiring devotees, because as Durvasa Muni, most of us don't fully understand what is the supreme shelter. We too, at times when a very perplexed situation comes forward towards us, a situation that is very challenging in terms of, you know, our well-being and our, you know, balance or settles feeling. When those situations come towards ourselves that completely disrupt our reality, in general, we try to take shelter of so many things, but to have that supreme shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In general, you know, we try to maintain different shelters. Something similar to happen to Arjuna. When Arjuna was confronted with the reality of having to fight, you know, these very dear personalities to him, the circumstance, when he was faced with that reality, which was basically the reality that everything that was dear and known to him to have, you know, to be of a, it was like a shelter. Everything that was known to him as a shelter was going to be destroyed. When he came to face that reality, then he was perplexed. To the point that he completely lost control of himself. He was not able to function as a powerful warrior that he was, the most, you know, arguably the most feared warrior that was there in earth, arguably. So he was not able, he lost himself, because he was faced with this circumstance that all his shelters were going to be dismantled. The person who was his biggest shelter was, as a child, as a family, in his family was his grandfather, Grandfather Bhishma. The person who was a shelter as a child who was learning was Dronacharya, and he had to kill. And then he saw, you know, all these different family members who were loving and supportive, who gave him shelter too, that all have to be destroyed. So what do we do? Well, we try to find so many ways of you know, saving those shelters or taking shelter. We find so many ones, but actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it's by ordeal that Krishna allows us to see that whatever we try, it becomes a failure. Whatever shelter we try that we know, and trying this and trying that that I usually take shelter of, it doesn't relieve us from the anxiety and the bewilderment and the perplexity of those situations. At best, we just simply put it under the rug or in the back burner, so to speak, like people say. But it remains there, haunting. How do you say, when the ghost haunting us, like a ghost, you know? It remains there. It goes with us until we take shelter of, or until we take shelter of the Supreme, of the Lotus Feet of the Lord. So, and even further, there's a much important lesson here that I would gonna try to draw or highlight. So, Durvasa Muni is discovering this, because he didn't have a perfect conception of the personality of Godhead. His conception was faulty. It had faults. It was not complete. He was very powerful, a powerful yogi, but his conception of the absolute truth was incomplete. He was meditating in the impersonal Brahman. He was taking shelter. So, impersonal means that there is no the personality of Godhead. It's just an energy. So that energy he can find in law, just like impersonalists. In general, when they want to achieve something, they use one of the personalities that are the controllers. We have the three controllers in this universe. They're called the guna avatars. So the three deities or controllers of the universe: Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva. So either one, you know, for the impersonalist, either one. And at the end, they also not, they're just like a stepping stones. The so-called bhakti of the impersonalist is just a front. It doesn't exist, because bhakti means love, devotion, and that love implies two. It implies someone else. That there's the lover and there's the object of love. So if everything is one, then there is no love. It's just a front. So what the impersonalist sees is that you can use any of these personalities for your purpose. You know, they represent the same thing. They represent that supreme energy. So, Durvasa Muni is finding that he realized he made a mistake. He realized he committed a great offense because of the severity of the reaction that came towards him. Because the power of the Sudarshan Chakra, he was faced with that. And that powerful demon that he created was destroyed in no time by the Sudarshan Chakra, like a moth flying into a fire. There's no, you know, so like that. And then he sees the Sudarshan Chakra coming towards him at, you know, at the speed of light. The Sudarshan Chakra travels, you know, is almost like immediately. It is explained when Lord Krishna released the Sudarshan Chakra and cuts the head of Shishupal, it was like, you know, it was like immediate, like that. To the point that almost, you know, the head remained body as it was fully cut. It was so, you know, perfect. Very, very fast. So Durvasa Muni had to use all his might, yogic power, to be able to, you know, be a little ahead. So he goes and takes shelter first of Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma declining, I can't do anything. I have no capacity of power against the Sudarshan Chakra, the weapon of Lord Vishnu. So disappointed, he goes, okay, Lord Shiva, he's definitely greater than Lord Brahma. You know, and Lord Shiva is the father of Durvasa Muni. So Lord Shiva definitely, he's supreme, he can give me protection. But Lord Shiva tells him that we can't do anything. You know, we're simply subservient to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu. So then, he have to go to Lord Vishnu. When he goes to Lord Vishnu, he's going to discover something even more surprising. That Lord Vishnu basically tells him, although he have reached the supreme shelter, and he comes to beg for the shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is say, okay, he made it. He got the direction. Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma sort of like put him in the right path. Now he reached the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But in some situation, that would have been quite fine. For example, Dhruva Maharaj was directed to worship Lord Vishnu. He got shelter of Lord Vishnu and he had the full shelter of Lord Vishnu. The Prachetas, they receive instruction from Lord Shiva to worship Lord Vishnu. He gave mantra and they receive the mercy of Lord Vishnu. So like that, one may say, well, Durvasa Muni got it. He went to Lord Vishnu and he will offer, you know, nice prayers to Lord Vishnu. You are the supreme shelter. Please protect me. So one may say, you know, yeah, he got it. He may be right, but what is the problem? And what is the difference? That Durvasa Muni committed a very big blunder in offending a devotee of the Lord. And basically disregarding the transcendental spiritual bureaucracy, so to speak. There's a bureaucracy. There's a transcendental bureaucracy in the whole creation. Krishna makes it like that. And it's common sense. Even in the mundane world, to reach, it's not that you decide, I'm going to see the King of England, the Queen. I'm going to see the Queen of England. And I'm going to the Buckingham Palace, and I'm just going to knock the door where she is, and I'm going in. Doesn't work like that. You're going to have a surprise that, you know, the guys in the puffy, you know, uniform, you know, like that, and the big hat, they're going to, you know, kick you out. You know, they may treat you, you know, as some sort of a crazy person, you know, a terrorist or something like that. Because there's a bureaucracy. You have to go to the proper channels to be able to have an audience with this highest person. It doesn't work like that. Similarly, there's a bureaucracy here in the universe too. To be able to have access to the personality of Godhead, one has to go to the proper channels. And Lord Vishnu basically told Durvasa Muni, you want my shelter? Well, I can give you shelter. You have to receive it. You have to go to the proper channels. You have to go through all to, you know, the proper channels, yeah. So what is that proper channel? There's a very nice story in the Padma Purana that that Lord Shiva says this famous verse that Prabhupada quotes a lot. Once Parvati Devi, he asked Lord Shiva, she is the faithful wife of Lord Shiva, who worshipped with great devotion and affection Lord Shiva. So she sees, you know, the greatest Lord is Lord Shiva. And she asks, of all kinds of worships, whose worship is the best? And Lord Shiva replied, told her, this very famous verse, Aradhananam Sarvesham, Aradhananam Sarvesham, Vishnur Aradhanam Param. Aradhanam Param, the supreme worship, Aradhanam Param, is the worship of Lord Vishnu. Aradhananam Sarvesham, of all kinds of worships that are there, the Param Aradhanam is the worship of Lord Vishnu. And then Parvati became a little disappointed or disheartened, because then she talked to herself. She was mortified, thinking that, but I'm serving Lord Shiva, so I hold a lower position, so this is not the highest. So she was feeling disheartened because her heart was to serve Lord Shiva. So so now she thinks, you know, well, maybe, you know, this is lower. So she was disappointed. But then Lord Shiva says, Tasmat Parataram Devi Tadiyanam Samarchanam. So this Tadiyanam Samarchanam, or this Aradhanam, Prabhupada quotes, Tadiyanam Aradhanam, the worship of the Tadiyanam, the worship of the devotee, higher than the worship of Lord Vishnu, is the worship of the devotee of Lord Vishnu, or anything that is connected to Lord Vishnu is higher. And then she smiled, thinking, then I am serving the devotee of the Lord. Shiva is devotee, Vaishnavam Yata Shambhu. So I'm doing the best thing. So she was very happy. That for example, Prabhupada gives this example. When we worship Tulsi Maharani, the worship of Tulsi Maharani is very, very high because she's very dear to Krishna. So, like that, the worship of the devotees is the highest. It's the highest type of worship. Because through the devotee, one gets Krishna. It's the channels, it's the proper bureaucracy, it's the proper channels to reach Krishna. In another Purana, also Prabhupada quotes this verse very much. Lord Krishna confirmed this. He says, ye me bhakta jana partha. So he's telling Partha, Arjuna. Ye me bhakta jana partha, ne me bhaktas chate janaha, mat bhaktanam chaje bhaktas, te me bhakta tama mataha. Those who worship me directly, they are not real devotees. Real devotees are those who are devotees of my devotees. And Lord Chaitanya, he teaches that. Marcel liked this verse. What is it? Gopi Bhartur Pada Kamalayor Dasa Dasa Anudas. This is the definition that Lord Chaitanya gave of himself. When Lord Chaitanya defines himself, he defines himself as this: Gopi Bhartur Pada Kamalayor Dasa Dasa Anudas. The term Anu means insignificant, atomic. So Lord Chaitanya considered himself the Anudasa. Dasa means servant. So he can say, consider himself the insignificant Anudasa, the insignificant servant of the Dasa of the Dasa. So the insignificant servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of the gopis, or not even the gopis, those who are at the lotus feet of the gopis. So it's quite retired, you know. So that is the principle. Once Prabhupada quote that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta will, when he goes in during his preaching in South India, he will meet Brahmanas, and he always will ask this question: under who you are performing your bhakti? Under whose direction you're performing your bhakti? Who is guiding you? And when Brahmanas will say, oh, no, I'm serving Lord Vishnu. So when they imply, when they don't bring, you know, a devotee of the Lord, a spiritual master, and they say, yeah, they're worshipping Lord Vishnu, like that, under Lord Vishnu, then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta won't say anything. He will continue very stern, and then later he will tell his disciples that they're not real devotees. This fake devotion. So that is the principle. The principle that Durvasa Muni is finding, he will find, is that the shelter of all shelter is the lotus feet of the devotee of the Lord. Therefore, the spiritual master, the devotee of the Lord, another name for the devotee of the Lord is Ashraya Vigraha. Is the form by which you should take shelter. Ashraya means shelter. The form of shelter is the form of the spiritual master. So that's the connection we have. And even towards the spiritual master, we cultivate the mood. We cultivate the mood that we're the servant of the devotees. Of the devotees, of the devotees, of the devotees. Like that. And that's the greatest principle. And that's the reality that is hitting Durvasa Muni, that at the end, he will receive shelter. He will, at the end, by the mercy of all these great personalities, and top amongst them, the mercy of the Ambarish Maharaj, he will be fully released and safe. Any comments or questions? How everybody fare the fasting? Did good? Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Glad to see you here.
Yeah.
Back. I have a question. Does this like system when you have to be servant? Devotees can like get this idea some not clearly, like to become, I mean, become weak, you know, like for example, I'm your devotee, I follow you, and I take on all the responsibility from my shoulders, you know, like I'm fine, I'm not that big, I'm just servant, you know, so like doesn't we have to have like some leader like character in ourselves, you know? It's very tricky situation when somebody can hear that, you know, like, oh, so I have to just like do what my master says and that's it.
Passively there.
Yeah, and just like that's gonna bring me to spiritual world. I'm fine. I eat prasadam 16 rounds, few things and that's it. And I'm fine. I'm relaxed, no stress. I'm already on my way.
Yeah.
Like people can be like, you know, like devotee can come like that, you know, very like, oh, I'm already there, I'm fine, I have a shelter, I have an ashram. So you know, like
yeah.
It's very tricky.
It is a symptom of maturity. It's a symptom of maturity that we're meant to be conscious. And we're trying to become Krishna conscious. So the principle is right. The principle of being a simple, humble servant is a right principle. But we can take all these principles and act completely disconnected, unconscious. And that's a sign of immaturity. In the beginning, you know, we're just finding ourselves in the culture of Krishna, of Vaishnava. We're finding ourselves, you know, this new Vaishnava culture, very different than ours. Our material culture is, you know, is we are at the center. And if I do something for someone, it's a calculated, you know, effort, which is meant to get something for me. What is it for me? You know, in general, that's what motivates always. There is some motivation. So that's what we bring into the table. Now we're being sort of, we have to undo that and live onto a different paradigm, which is I'm the servant of the servant. I'm just a simple servant. Now in the beginning stages of going through that transformation, I may, you know, just like the process of Durvasa Muni, it's a process of maturing, going to a higher realization until you find the final, you know, the highest. And then, you know, you're ready for that. But he obviously was not ready. He couldn't recognize Maharaj Ambarish. He couldn't recognize that he was actually coming to visit this great exalted personality that was, you know, worshipable. Even for him, he could not recognize. So there was a disconnect with the spiritual reality. So in the beginning, that's what happened to most of us. We go into a process of connecting things gradually. So it's expected, it's natural. The thing that you say, if we remain unconscious, we remain stuck that, I feel fine on this one. I don't do anything. I just say, you know, I take the easy road. Well, Prabhu, no, I cannot do because my authority told me. So you have, you know, you don't, there's no what Prabhupada calls independent thinking, independently thoughtful. Prabhupada say that. He wants his disciples, his followers, to be independently thoughtful, which doesn't mean independent, but it means thoughtful. That you have to progress in the capacity of having proper choices, to making choices. You have to progress on that. And that's a matter of maturity. When we come from being a teenager into an adult, you know, that there's a process of learning. You know, the whole process of learning is to prepare you how to make proper choices in life so you can have, you know, a healthy, productive life. So maturity allows you to think, be thoughtful, and being able to, according to what's the right thing to do, you know, you can do your choices. But the principle of being a servant, it remains true all the way to perfection. It doesn't change because that's who we are. That's Lord Chaitanya's definition of the jiva, the servant of the servant. It's just a matter of connecting that to reality, connecting our consciousness to that reality. If we are not connected, it's just, the Prabhupada calls it, it's just like a reflection or a vase. It's not the real thing. Yes, Marcel Pro.
When sometimes when talking to devotees, especially devotees who just come, and they sometimes have a misconception of, like, when devotees, you know, are humble, and we hear a lot of examples of devotees in prayers saying that they're nothing and they're very low, and sometimes someone misperceives this as just like low self-esteem, and like, the, you know, sometimes they say we have to be confident, and they present their opinion of not maybe being humble, but being more like kind of not necessarily puffed up, but more confident of, you know, their own self, and like more kind of not so degrading their own self, or, you know, seeing themselves as low. So how can we when this comes up, how can we present, you know, like, how can we present the humility in a way that they could take it and not kind of see it as low self-esteem, but actually, like, this is what we need to progress. We need that mood to progress.
Yeah, similar answer to, or in the same theme of back to Dimitri Prabhu question, that, you know, we come and we start to, you know, adopt these qualities that are so foreign to ourselves, being a servant, being humble, you know, lower than the, you know, we should be more humble than a blade of grass. You know, how do you do that? I mean, really. And then the explanation is that the blade of grass gets trampled and never protests. You know, the blade of grass is like this, and then you come and, you know, and then goes back, never protests, you know. So we're getting all these qualities that is so foreign to our culture, so foreign to ourselves. And as sincere devotees, yes, this is what I'm supposed to do. So I am being told, you know, cultivating. Even if you don't have it, you know, go through the move, you know, practice. So the devotees rightfully do. Yes, Prabhu, I'm so low. You know, yes, I'm not anything like that. But if it becomes more, you know, when it becomes, it's almost like you take this thing and you try to use this thing, apply them in the same sort of paradigms that you have, which is, I should be the most of something. I should be the best of things like that. So there was this instance that I actually met this devotee, Prabhupada disciple. He was a very funny, very quirky, that's how you say the word, devotee. You know, sort of fattish, you know, and with glasses, and he was, you know, always, you know, like making sort of like waves. So very pompous. So one time Prabhupada in Vrindavan was, you know, walking. He left the temple after the program, and then he's going towards his room, and then all of a sudden, in the middle of his path, then this devotee was waiting there, and then announces, "Jai Om Srila Prabhupada!" And then, you know, throw himself in dandavats, you know, blocking the path, and then with great pomp say, "Prabhupada, I am the most fallen of all," and like that, he's the most fallen. And then Prabhupada say, "You're the most of anything. Go and find some useful service to do." So Prabhupada didn't appreciate the whole display, "I'm the most fallen, you're the most of anything." So immaturity, you know, we take in those moods, we take in those things and trying to, in an artificial manner, try to say, "I am this and that." We have to cultivate the mood of humility, but the mood of humility comes with just to be service oriented, to constantly be open to serve. And to serve means, you know, that I would, you know, if I'm cultivating the mood that I am insignificant, you know, and that's a great, you know, when we take the position of an insignificant servant, I mean, that is a very exalted position from the perspective of Lord Krishna and Lord Chaitanya. And if I'm saying, okay, I don't feel that way, I don't feel, I mean, insignificant. If I say I'm insignificant, I'm insignificant, or You know, I may say that, but suppose you tell me, hey, Prabhu, you're just insignificant. You know, I feel, come on, man. you know, why? Why are you telling me that? So in reality, I don't feel insignificant. I want to feel that I have some significance, that I, you know, can contributing, you know. And then I do some consideration and, you know, and like that. So I know that I don't feel that way, but I want to actually think, you know, how can I be, you know, humble? How can I have this service attitude? So let me serve the devotees. Let me have this service attitude. Let me be open, you know, to always serve. And even when I'm not able to serve, you know, I have a service attitude. It's just this attitude that we have to cultivate. That for the devotees, you know, I am actually ready to extend myself. You know, so I think it's about maturity. It's about, you know, growing comfortable at it, you know, and keep doing it and doing it and doing it in a thoughtful manner, you know, like that. Immaturity means artificial, and we have to be able to see that we don't want to be artificial. We want to connect with the reality. Okay, I'm puffed up, I have these difficulties, but I am going to do the right things. The right thing is that I know that I have, that pride becomes controlled by service mood. So that's what I'm cultivating. I want to serve the devotees, and I'm doing it with happiness. Like that. Anything else, Krishna Arjuna?
You know, in Vasimuni's case, you know, you narrated his turning to certain personalities to look for shelter. And you'd also brought up Arjuna being in a certain position to find that he was going to, in some sense, have to destroy his shelters. So let's say there's a person's coming to serve in the temple, and the person gets a sense of strength and I guess even comfort because of the shelter that's provided. But the person sees that, oh, this is very nice. They now can have learned better how to actually do things for their shelters in a better way. So for instance, oh, one needs to serve. Oh, okay, now I can serve my family members really well. It seems to be more of an emphasis than the purpose for coming to do something in a reciprocal manner for the shelter that's provided within the temple setting. So what would be a kind of educative response if a person is in that situation?
Yeah, I think it's nice that you highlight that part, because more or less that's what happened to Durvasa Muni. You know, Krishna does that. Krishna creates a situation. That's the power of a place like an ashram. We almost force. If we're sincere, Krishna will force us, will force the education. Basically, we come to face that our shelters start to, you know, we go increasingly more anxious and more disturbed. This is a result of art shelters. And where does art shelters come from? From our selfish sort of condition. So as long as we approach, and we approach devotional service like that in the beginning, we approach devotional service with selfishness. And through the process of devotional service, then that selfishness starts to be dismantled gradually. You know, we become more aware that it's for the pleasure of devotees and Krishna. The service attitude again does it, because you know, we take ourselves out of the center and put devotees, you know, and Krishna at the center. So you know, that practice helps us. But it's true, you know, in the beginning there's this selfish, you know, thing. I tend to do things for myself. You know, the sadhana, yeah, for me, it makes me feel better. It's all, you know, it's about me. You know, sometimes we find ourselves, this doesn't work for me. This worked for me. It's about me, you know. And that gradually becomes dismantled. Then we find that the more we have that attitude, the more miserable we become. And if we don't let go, then basically we're kicking ourselves out, you know, of Krishna's shelter. So what Krishna does, and to the sincere devotee, is that he brings it to that point that you have to, you come to understand that, you know, either I take the shelter of Krishna. Mataji, can you sit down, please? Thank you. Yeah. The temple is closed. So then, you know, that's the situation. It becomes dismantled. I was going to mention one thing, and I end with this, that I think it was an important point that I forgot that you remind me. That Durvasa Muni, when he came to see Lord Vishnu, this because of impersonal, the impersonal, that there is no way for an impersonal person to actually being able to take shelter of Lord Vishnu unless he takes shelter of a devotee of the Lord. So the Bhaktyamana Vijanati, that only through devotion, and those who possess this devotion are the devotee. So it's only through the devotee that one can actually come to the shelter of Lord Vishnu. Otherwise, even to the point of reaching Lord Vishnu, he had no shelter of Lord Vishnu. He was sent back, which is quite, you know, quite an important revelation that, you know, that gentleman, the white-haired gentleman, they have the offer. Yeah. Okay. So we finish here. Garantarashiman Bhagavatam Ki Jai.